A point that was also raised by the keynote speaker of the ceremony, Parliament Speaker Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf.
The Islamic Revolution is known worldwide with the name of Imam Khomeini, a great man known for fighting imperialism who always invited the nation to be united in the face of our enemies' plots and said, "You know, you're walking down the right path when your enemies do everything they can to stop you. If your enemies are ever indifferent, it is a clear sign that we have deviated from the right path. So their increased animosity is actually a good sign."
That is why the presence of masses at the mausoleum this year is more significant than previous years, considering a period of foreign-backed riots in the country and Western countries increasing political pressure on Iran to unprecedented levels.
We are here to say that we are proud of our revolution and our country.
When Imam Khomeini needed our support to topple the Pahlavi regime, my sons did not hesitate.
I am here to say that I will always support the leader and the Islamic revolution.
My son gave his life for this revolution, and I am here to uphold his values.
Iranians are celebrating the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution at a time when they've managed to thwart foreign-backed riots in the country and bring peace and calm back to all the cities across Iran. More than anything, the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution is a show of solidarity. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
The decision to send German and American tanks to Ukraine is continuing to generate controversy. Many believe the move will prolong the war, and there's concern as to how Russia might respond. However, at a parliamentary hearing on Tuesday, EU legislators were told the West should go even further.
Russia is attacking Ukraine from Russian territory, so obviously we should provide the Ukrainians with long-range missiles, obviously.
There are a lot of EU lawmakers who agree.
Any delay to supply Ukraine with needed weaponry and ammunition is more lives lost on the battlefield.
Some argue constantly supplying lethal weapons to Ukraine is foolish.
We're prepared to risk nuclear war in order to continue this US-NATO proxy war. It is total madness. And this European Union and the European Parliament have lost the plot. They've lost the run of themselves.
European Union taxpayers have provided 50 billion euro to Kiev since last March.
What happens to all the money we send to Ukraine? Is it just disappearing into individuals' pockets? Even President Zelensky has had to admit there's a big problem with widespread corruption.
A number of legislators would like to see less division within the EU.
Austria and Hungary just decided we will not deliver weapons. Okay, it's their decision. But that shows already some hesitation or some breakup of unity.
Spanish MEP Javier Nart told his colleagues it's, quote, ridiculous to suggest Ukraine can win the war against Russia. For now, the US and Germany have ruled out providing fighter jets to Ukraine. Others, including France, have not. According to many analysts, the risk that the conflict could escalate further and spiral completely out of control has never been greater. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
The supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging. And to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it. And leave no grief unless Thou takes it away. And leave no enemy. And leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names. In the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is His anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is His good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from Thee, O Patron of Beneficence.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The International Atomic Energy Agency has made an announcement that is void of the truth. It's issued a report that accuses Iran of making an undeclared change at the Fordow nuclear power plant. Iran made an objection and clarified the issue with the IAEA, which the agency admitted it had made a mistake. In this edition of the Spotlight, we will look at how the IAEA has once again not only politicized Iran's civilian nuclear file, but has now resorted to making false allegations against the Islamic Republic's civilian nuclear program. Let me introduce Sayed Mohsen Abbas, who's a journalist and political commentator, joining us from London. Sayed Mohsen Abbas, welcome. So we're taking a look at this accusation in which, based on the IAEA, Iran had made an undeclared change to the interconnection, as it called, between the two clusters of advanced machines enriching uranium up to 60% purity at its Fordow plant. Iran has had a reaction to that, in which it said that the IAEA inspector's interpretation was incorrect. and then immediately obviously informed the IAEA on this. Why is the IAEA portraying this? First of all, why would the IAEA make a mistake? These are supposed to be professionals in this most sensitive of all fields.
Well, it's right to have a little laugh at these institutions because they really have become a total joke and completely unprofessional. I mean, look, first of all, let's get the first fact on the table. In November 22, Iran actually sent a letter to the IAEA about the decision to do this 60% enrichment. Now, the JCPOA and all the other agreements are really pretty much null and void at the moment. There's no real reason that Iran should even be abiding by anything within that agreement. But even whether it's the non-proliferation treaty or the nuclear non-proliferation treaty that they're whinging about, the truth is Iran has no obligation to do anything on any of these issues. It's their magnanimity that they actually allow the IAEA to come in and essentially spy for their paymasters. Because, look, the reality is that these institutions, and let's come directly to the IAEA itself in answer to part of your question, Rafael Grossi and the like, their pay salaries ultimately come from the kind of sources which are all aligned to the Zionist interests. Inside their establishments, they have the United States of America's various officers all installed in there, probably Zionist ones as well, Israeli ones covertly. So they are completely compromised. These institutions essentially are an instrument of what one analyst has described as pre-aggression. What their purpose is to basically create scenarios which indict Iran and then basically come up with false charges based on the scenarios they create. And then when they can't prove those scenarios, already they've put it out to the media. So there's an environment of Iranophobia which they've developed. And they want to use those false charges then to create aggression, to create conflict, to create war and a mood music within their own Western environments to justify potential unilateral action by the U.S. and Israel against Iran.
Isn't that just another form of lying? I mean, really, if you want to take a look at it in a simpler term. Anyways, what's more interesting here, and I'd like to get your train of thought, is the way that this was reported in the news, where it says the IAEA report seen by Reuters, IAEA Chief Grossi is concerned that Iran has implemented a substantial change. Then, and it came in drips. IAEA report seen by Reuters, IAEA informed Iran that its failure to declare the change was inconsistent with Iran's obligations under Article 45. And then the way the wires work, they come in with these drips. Say, Mohsen Abbas, maybe you're familiar. And then they issue a final report, of which they say the UN nuclear watchdog chided Iran in a confidential report seen by Reuters for making an undeclared change to the interconnection between the two cascades, et cetera, et cetera. First of all, maybe you can tell us, why is it that the IAEA reports that are confidential are being overlooked by a media agency by the name of Reuters, and then for it to be broadcast, of which Iran has said, what's going on here? Why are we getting leaks like that?
Very simply, the Reuters themselves, if you look at the history of Reuters, you'll see that they are a complete Zionist operation themselves. They have corporate Zionist masters and owners. They are run for the purposes of creating psychological operations, media propaganda, fake news, all geared towards supporting the Zionist Western Empire and their imperialist interests. The IAEA, therefore, are working essentially in tandem with another arm of that Zionist network. This is an intricate network which clearly has infiltrated virtually every major world institution, whether it's the WHO, whether it's the World Health Organization or the United Nations or the International Atomic Agency here or whoever else overlooks the interests economically of the world. What you see is essentially a very carefully laid out set of, institutions which work for the same interests. And this is the thing that one has to understand. And that interest, the money mafia interest, the Zionist-led money mafia interest, its number one enemies is, of course, the Islamic Republic of Iran, because everything that Iran stands for, whether it's sovereignty, independence, its velayat-e faqih political system, its desire to be, you know, on its own feet, and its progress, its advancement, its rapid advancement in the science and technological fields and all others, all of this poses a challenge to the illusions and the veneer of actual systemic, you know, goodness that they like to usually place in the camp of the Zionist imperialist kind of institution. The fact is that those are all being exposed by Iran, and the IAEA, the JCPOA, the nuclear issue is a major revealer of these realities. So what you've got is a synchronization. These things are discussed in the corridors of power, where the Israeli lobbies will be present, and they'll pressure and push a particular line. The state operators, the politicos, the media, and of course these other institutions, then will be all clicked, you know, simultaneously to do their particular job as and when required. And that's what you're seeing. It's all very synchronized.
Well, you talked about the Zionist regime. Of course, I'd like to find out from you what are we looking at when it comes to their participation, which they are very active, either in front of the camera through its very animated Prime Minister Netanyahu, or behind the scenes. Of course, the most recent being the visit by Israel Prime Minister to France. Interesting that France would issue anything against Iran on a civilian nuclear program in the presence of Israel, when it helped Israel to develop his nuclear warhead program.
Well, this idea of helping is a very important one, because it goes well beyond helping. They establish and root all of the kind of instability in the west of Asia, particularly through Israel. Israel is their primary frontline mechanism for creating division, creating disunity amongst the Arabs, for also threatening them with military punishment and other kinds of punishment. Israel is essentially the landing base for the Anglo-Zionist empire in West Asia, and it's the chief nest of you know, conflict creation. And in this instance, what you're seeing is Israel, you know, being exposed again, actually, because, you know, it's an open secret that the Israelis have well over 400 or so Iranian nuclear arms, you know, fully tooled up. I mean, and yet what we've got is an IAEA and America and the Atlantic powers focusing on an Iran that doesn't have nuclear capability as yet, and has said that it doesn't want it either, for that matter, and has gone into negotiations to try and create a situation where everybody can be satisfied, yet that's all been rejected. And yet there is Israel, sitting right in that same region, the most nasty, the most brutal, the most torturing, undemocratic nation in that region. And that's saying something, given you've got Saudi Arabia and other despots in that region as well. There you have this particular entity, which is allowed to continue building this nuclear stockpile, and it is not subject to the non-proliferation treaty, the nuclear non-proliferation treaty at all. The IAEA makes no inspections of Israel and its kind of nuclear facilities. It doesn't even have the right to do those. And the US and the British and the French and the Germans make absolutely no noise whatsoever. But here are those same powers in Iran's situation. They've been squealing, basically saying that Iran is inconsistent with its obligations under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Inconsistent? What about Israel? I mean, and what about, for instance, Saudi Arabia, which the Americans have literally tendered American nuclear production companies, corporates, to come in and tender for contracts to help Saudi Arabia to become nuclear developed. I mean, the hypocrisy is profound. And of course, it's all based on the fact that Israel sees Iran as its primary enemy in West Asia, and its primary, if you like, opposition to Israel's own Odin Yinon plan, which is designed to basically dominate the whole of the west of Asia, from the river to the sea, as they say, from the Euphrates to the Israeli to the Mediterranean.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, it does sound like a broken record, but it really needs to always be brought into the conversation. So let's bring in John Bosnich, journalist and political analyst from Belgrade. John Bosnich, welcome. You know, the Israeli factor in Iran's civilian nuclear file has always been a thorn in the side of whatever blank you want to fill in. It's quite incredible because Israel is not a member of the NPT, but at the same time is receiving a cordial welcome when it comes to the IAEA. Where Iran is a member, and yet, as our guest there just indicated, the last statement coming from U.S. and the E3 is the fact that Iran is inconsistent, along with the language that IAEA has used. Why is it that a non-NPT member can have such influence on an NPT member and be received warmly by its aides or its allies?
Well, first of all, we have to categorize which non-member that is, and that's Israel. Israel holds itself out as an exceptional state, just as America does, the exceptional superpower. And therefore, both countries, which are allies to the deepest possible level, Israeli investments elect the president of the United States in most of the elections. So what we have here is a situation where two countries, which are actually self-declared outlaw states, which do not recognize these international tribunals, which do not recognize international bodies, have by themselves created an echo chamber in which one confirms the other and the rest of the world listens because they dominate the international media. So we're being fed an illusion here by parties which themselves have not only rejected these treaties and these rules, but which have flagrantly violated them. Israel is a nuclear superpower, not just a nuclear power. In its regional area, Israel is a nuclear superpower, and it is now threatening Iran and using its leverage in the United States to pressure Iran and to actually threaten war on Iran for what Iran has opened to public inspection via the organizations of the IAEA, which is, among other international organizations, infiltrated from the top to the bottom by representatives of, guess who? Israel and the United States. It's a closed chamber in which they want to dominate all power.
Some ask, why does Iran need a civilian nuclear program, John Bosnich? Based on what statements were given by the head of the Atomic Energy Organization, Mohammad Islami, one of them is that he said just recently that Iran intends to generate 20% of its electricity via nuclear energy. That, on the one hand. And just today in our news, we had how he officially announced the production line of sanitary, superabsorbent, blood-clotting power and the Essence microwave extractor. These are all medicinal uses of nuclear energy, and basically the civilian aspect that Iran is using to the fullest. This is something that is somewhat overlooked, especially for people who ask why Iran needs a nuclear energy program with civilian purposes. Why then would there be such pushback from the U.S. and from, of course, Israel and other, again, allies?
First of all, we have to put this all in context. The entire world is talking about global warming. Iran is a major petroleum product producer, and Iran is looking at a short-term elimination of its major revenue, which is from petroleum products. My own home country, Canada, has had a nuclear program since the 1960s. We have nuclear plants across the country. There is a nuclear power plant less than 1 hour's drive from my hometown. Nobody asked Canada what we were going to do with our nuclear power plants. Nobody asked us what was the rationale for us, as one of the world's leading petroleum product producers out of our Western oil fields, why we needed nuclear power. And so let's, if we put this thing in context, why is it that Iran is asked to justify every action that it takes, which is simply a follow-on and identical to actions which have been taken by dozens of countries across the Western world? The difference, Iran is not an American colony, and we, the others, are. That's the difference. And if you were an occupied American colony, they would be pushing your nuclear power program. They would actually be suggesting to you that you get involved in their nuclear weapons research program as well. That's the way this world is run. It is not fair, and you are on the receiving end of the American empire and its Israel partners.
Mm-hmm. Simhasan Abbas, recently there was an occurrence that basically needs your breakdown as to the way it happened and as to the results that it got. And it was how the European Union was trying to push the IRGC, Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, to be listed as a terrorist organization. And they rounded up their MPs. They had a meeting about that. Of course, prior to that, lots of media hype about that. But it came down to the fact that Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian said, listen, if you're going to go ahead with this, then there might be some question marks and maybe a move by Iran in order to move away from being a member of the NPT. And then we noticed somewhat, not immediately, but very soon after, how they backed down from that stance. Well, why do you think that happened? I mean, what was the reason? Because that's not something that Iran has... at least based on my memory and recollection, that it has said before. But then it showed what the reaction that came from the EU, basically backing away from it.
Well, I think the game is that the Western Atlantic Zionist Alliance basically wants to push Iran as far as they can. They don't want to push them too far, yet they are pushing their luck to the point where Iran is left with no choice. I mean, Iran has no real reason to abide by any of these international agreements and laws because it's up against an enemy, as we've just clarified, which has no regard for any of these rules and regulations. It had no regard for the rules and regulations when it assassinated Lieutenant General Soleimani and the extrajudicial killing of a diplomatic mission that was heading to Iraq. They didn't. No international institution followed up any kind of punishment for the Americans. The nuclear scientists that were regularly murdered by the Israelis, assassinated in Iran itself, I haven't seen any follow-up to that from the institutions that regard themselves as the paragons of justice and bringing nations to book. And so it goes on. This is a never-ending list where, Iran itself it doesn't really need to abide by any of these laws or any of these institutions because, first of all, most of these institutions get their funding from the U.S. I can name... and therefore, they're all
very well.
They all have an illegitimate.
Sorry to jump in. I want to give 1 minute to John Busnish, under a minute. Sorry, Simhasan Abbas. John Busnish, even in U.S.'s national security assessment and report, it came out that Iran is not after developing nuclear weapons. And that has been stated time and again. But at the same time, we noticed the politicization of Iran's nuclear file. Are they aware of the inconsistencies when it comes to Iran? And what is their ultimate game plan moving forward, or your projection down the line here? In less than a minute, please.
Yes. Well, they absolutely are aware and are designing all of their dispatches, all of their information as a propaganda war against Iran. There is no doubt in my mind that Iran is a military target of Israel and a military target of the United States because they simply want to control every country in the region. I suggest that you continue to abide by the agreements that you've signed and continue to develop your civil program, as you've said to the public, and to defend yourself in international institutions as best you can. And with God's help, you will survive and succeed.
Thank you, John Busness, journalist and political analyst. Say Mohsen Abbas, thank you for your contribution, journalist and political commentator from London. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mika Batahwe and the team, it's goodbye.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forest, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Islamic revolution in Iran is the greatest and most influential phenomenon in the contemporary history. The victory of the Islamic revolution, on the one hand, disrupted the political equations of the global arrogance, and on the other hand, toppled the Pahlavi regime, which was installed by the British and supported by the US. Of course, the place I'm going to visit today has something to do with what I just said. This place, which used to be a dreadful prison before the Islamic Revolution, is called Tehran's Ebrat Museum. This museum used to be a secret detention center in Tehran under the toppled Pahlavi regime, where the Shah's secret service known as the Savak widely practiced torture against the opponents of the Shah. This prison museum recalls a slice of the tragic and painful history of its prisoners for visitors by featuring the sculptures of torturers, prisoners, and different methods and devices that were used for torture. What I'm going to realize today by visiting this museum is getting to know more about the martyrs and revolutionaries whose efforts and struggle led to the triumph of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. Mark the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution from February 1st to 11th, known as the 10-day dawn ceremonies. The Iranian nation toppled the British-installed and US-backed Pahlavi regime 44 years ago on February 11th, 1979, ending 2,500 years of monarchic rule in the country. The festivities known as the 10-day dawn start with ceremonies that mark the return to Iran of Imam Khomeini, the late founder of the Islamic Republic, after 15 years in exile. Millions of Iranians welcomed Imam Khomeini in Tehran on February 1, 1979. Imam Khomeini's arrival intensified month of popular protest against the Pahlavi regime. 10 days later, the rallies culminated in the downfall of the Pahlavi regime, bringing the curtain down on more than 2 millennia of monarchy in Iran. The Islamic Revolution established a new political system, a republic based on Islamic values and democracy. The museum. Undoubtedly, the walls and the gates of this dreadful place have witnessed many horrible events here. It is said that the detention center was constructed by German engineers under the order of Reza Khan, the first Shah of the Pahlavi regime, in 1932. The place was used as the first modern political prison at that time. After the fall of Reza Khan, his son, Mohammad Reza, continued his father's policies aimed at suppressing his opponents. After the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, this place was turned into a museum to show the cruelty of the Pahlavi regime and the way prisoners were kept and tortured. At the entrance, there is a circular building on three floors with so many cells and winding corridors, all of which lead to the main area. Oh, you would get shocked with its mysterious architecture, which made any effort of escape end in failure. The architecture is in a way that it does not even echo the screaming sounds. That's the reason why nobody ever knew about this prison at the heart of the city for years. Significant features of this prison include the complex design, the symmetry of the rooms, and the echoes of sound in them, and the obnoxious architecture of the prison, designed to increase the fear and torture of prisoners. Here, I should go up the stairs. I am now in the corridor. Here, on this wall, you can see the names of those who were kidnapped and tortured by the Savak. 4,004 people were kidnapped and tortured here. Oh, it's horrible. Really horrible. On the first floor, there was a room for interrogating the prisoners. The prisoners were then forced to put their clothes in these metal lockers. Their photos were taken then, and finally sent to cells. This jail used to have various sections, such as solitary confinement cells. Oh, torture places. It used to have 86 solitary confinement cells. Oh, I even heard that in critical conditions in 1979, the solitary confinement cells used to house 5 prisoners in a cell. Oh, it's even hard to imagine. have come to see the torture places. Oh my God. I beg you to turn off the radio if you have children under 15 around. This is the rule of the museum, because what I'm going to describe is really horrible. I wait for a moment for you to keep the radio out of the reach of children, and then I continue my description. Before entering the torture places, I should say that the walls of this place is not normal at all. Oh, they are frightening. The walls speak. Although we are now at a museum, you can still hear the screams of those who were brutally tortured here by the Shah's agents. The museum showcases torture techniques used during the era of Pahlavi regime, as well as wax figures of the torturers and prisoners. Here is one of the torture rooms. You can see prisoners hanging with their hands tied with metal handcuffs or receiving lashes. Different torture techniques were used. More than 79 techniques, it said. Including torturing the prisoners with power cables, electric shocks. Oh my God. And there was something called the hot cage. God damn! This cage is 80 centimeters long and just 50 centimeters wide. It's made of metal pipes used for humiliating the prisoners, including students, the pupils, the ulema, the teachers. The cage was then got very hot by putting a heater under it, which led to burning the prisoners. I feel nauseous. Though, knowing the truth is necessary. And in this prison, the agents of the Savak used the following torture techniques. Pinching the body flesh with pliers. Oh my God, I can't believe it. Extinguishing the cigarettes on the prisoner's body. Oh, forcing the prisoners to imitate animal sounds. Depriving the prisoner to use restroom. Sleep deprivation. Pulling one's fingernails. Well, I cannot continue. I feel a pain in my heart. I couldn't breathe there. There were many worse torture techniques which I couldn't describe. I think that's enough. This prison was also used as a detention center for prominent figures such as the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, God bless him. Well, I described this place as far as I could. To know more about the details of this museum, you can take a tour to this place. But remember something. When you visit the museum, just listen. The history speaks. Just listen. Listen deeply. Listen to those who made history and those who were thrown to the dustbin of history. I walk a little here in the fresh air. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. We'll be right back.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.